This is the Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
Good news in shoes.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Martech program, Joe Martech.
Sorry, as you know, this there is not go. Getting better.
No. Okay, we're on the air, gentlemen.
Are we really on
yes,
the
sir.
Air?
Yes, sir.
Barbie's not getting better. Can you believe that?
Sorry to hear that.
Oh.
Well, listen, I got to say hello to a client of mine who mentioned to me that I need to say something about what I'm going to say about.
Oh.
But Dottie, thank you so much for reminding me. She came in the office today. She's a faithful listener to WCNO, a good Christian lady, and I appreciate her very much. But she is now 65.
Okay.
And she hates this. And luckily, Dottie, I didn't give you her last name, so nobody will know who I'm talking about. But she's talking about taking Social Security for the first time.
Okay.
And she's not ready to take Social Security. She really doesn't want to. And she knows, because she's working,
right,
and she's making good wages,
right,
and she's probably going to work for another year or so.
Okay.
So we know that 66 and a half, give or take, she knows when she becomes full age, which is getting close, but she may not take it for another year or so.
Okay.
Now, and she also knows that she gets like an 8% raise every year she waits.
That's
up
right.
Until 70, correct?
That's correct.
Here came the $64,000 question.
What happens if she works? Does it increase her benefit?
Does it increase her benefit?
Well,
that was not the question.
Why did I know?
But that was not the question.
It can. It might. Yes, it will.
So if she keeps working,
if
it might increase
working.
Plus the 8%.
Yes.
Okay.
But at 70 and a half, they'll recalculate.
No matter what she'll need.
Now, but it's likely this is not going to do much good.
Okay, but here comes the other. Here's what the question was. So let's say she wants to start taking it when she's 67 or 68. Pick a number.
Okay.
How much notice does she have to give to Social Security to get into the system?
You know, as soon as you go down and apply, they'll stamp it, the date of application.
Yeah.
And once it's approved,
and then they'll pay
your
retroactive to that date.
To that date, yep. Mm-hmm.
So she said, you ought to talk about that on the radio. So, Dottie, here we are. And we've got Vince Rosino, CPA, forensic CPA, ex-college professor, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. But not at Columbia.
But I mean,
almost as good.
Almost as good. So I just thought this was a subject that we almost never talk about.
Oh, yeah, we've talked about it from time to time.
Well, let's
go
back.
But it's a very interesting subject.
Well, let's go back. And we're jumping into the show real quick, and then after we jump in for a while, I'll tell you who we are. But literally what happens is, and keep me in line, when you turn 62, you can take a reduced benefit, Social Security, correct?
Correct. You can take an early benefit at 62. And that usually it results in about a 25% discount off of what you'd get
the full
in the full benefit at your normal retirement
which
age,
is 66 and a half
or whatever. Mm-hmm. If it depends on your date of birth.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything over 1954 and after, you're waiting a little bit longer, like months for every year.
Right. You know. Now, and if you take it at 62 and you make $50,000 a year on the side,
no good.
Big problem.
There's a window between the early retirement date and your normal retirement date.
Right.
You're restricted as to how much income you can earn in that period, because I think now it's something, I think it's 15.8. They change every year, it gets up for inflation. But anyway, you're only allowed to earn that much.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you earn over that, then they take back a dollar of your retirement benefit that you earn.
So if you made 50 grand and you were taking Social Security, the odds are good that you'll get nothing.
You'll get zero.
Zero.
In fact, if you earn about more than 30,000 or 31,000, you've got no benefit at that point.
Yeah. So the key thing is this. It's like under $16,000 is the most you can earn and still keep your full Social Security benefit at age 62 or 63 or 64 or 65 until you reach full
benefit. And in the year that you are, the year you turn full benefit year, whatever that year is, 66 and a half is, you can earn more that year. You can earn, I think, $65,000 the year.
But then from then on, there's no limit.
There's no limit. Once you reach your full retirement age and you apply for Social Security, then there's no limit at that point.
That's it. Now, here comes the other wrinkle. Let's say you're making $300,000 a year and you're collecting Social Security. You're still paying in. But don't they also raise the amount of money that is the deductible for Medicare?
Yes. Medicare, the Medicare premium, now most people, I say all people are eligible for Medicare at 65.
Right.
The amount of the premium that you pay is dependent upon your household earning.
Household.
So if it's a husband and wife, it would be on the total combined income. Right. So if you're making $300,000 a year, there's a formula. You start out at the lowest level.
Right.
It's just $134
a month. $130 a month, right.
That level stays that level at $134 until you reach $170,000 of combined
income. That's adjusted gross income?
That is a total. That is taxable income.
Taxable income, okay.
Then once you get beyond that, it starts to increase your premium to when you reach about $400,000, you're up around $400 a month or something for Medicare.
Okay, that you're contributing for Medicare.
Yeah, so there's a scale. I forget exactly where the breaks are, but the more you make, the more you pay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And your Medicare premium.
There's another thing, too, that you can wait to take Social Security, but you've got to get in the Medicare system when you're 65.
Yeah.
You can't wait on that.
There's a penalty if you don't.
Well, you're automatically in Part A at 65. Automatic.
You have to register, though, Joe.
You have to register. You're not.
You don't automatically get Medicare.
I thought you did at 65. You have to register.
You've got to apply for
not
it.
Not Part B. I'm talking.
No, I know.
No. I think you might have a technical point there, but who just accepts Part A?
Well,
you're working for an employer that's giving you.
Well, Part A is just hospital.
Right.
Okay, so that's just it. Now Part B is doctors.
That's
okay. Anyway, point is that. What we suggest strongly, no matter how often we go through this, that no matter what, you call Social Security and you make an appointment and you go down and sit with them, and they are very, very, very cooperative to help you answer these questions. Now, oftentimes you need to write the questions down ahead of time so you know what to ask, because the people that work for Social Security are not big at offering unsolicited advice. They answer questions. Now, sometimes you get a person that will actually sit with you and try to help you, but it's not their job. So that's a gimme. But the bottom line is, when you're approaching age 65 or 62, it'd be a wise thing to do to make an appointment with the local Social Security office, go in, sit down with them, and explain your situation, who you are, married, single, divorced, widowed, whatever it might be, and let them work with you. And very often, before you go in, they will ask you questions on the phone, so they have some definitive answers for you before you even show up.
Yes, because, and there's also other benefits that people should be aware of, Joe. For example, there's widow benefits, Social Security, if your husband or wife dies.
Right.
And they were the higher wage earner.
That's my point.
Possibly you could get something for that. Also, if you're divorced.
Right.
You can apply for your spouse's benefit.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as they're collecting and they've applied, then you can get the spousal benefit.
You just have to be married over 10 years. Little minor
side
effect.
A little minor thing, you need to be married.
So don't divorce that guy in the ninth year. You got to wait till 10 years to get rid of him.
You'd be surprised how many people do, because they're not thinking about it.
I know.
You know, usually they're so incensed.
Well,
just can't wait to get rid of this.
But it's the rule.
Yeah.
So you just have to understand the rule. So I'm saying, when you start approaching this age, it's just a very smart thing to do, to call Social Security and make an appointment. These are government employees. They work for you. You're paying into the system. They owe you the time. So don't ever feel guilty about that. And whatever questions you've got, if you can't think of all the questions, you call us up. By the way, you can call anytime, 1-888. This is toll free. Write this number down. You should keep this next to the phone.
Keep it in the phone. WCNO.
There you go.
One. Because you may need that you make your pledge.
So you do it.
Coming up soon.
That's one. Right. Is it really again already?
Well, April, but, you know, time flies.
It's coming. Time flies, yeah.
This is already, yeah. 1-888-221-8990. Now, if you want to call in and ask any questions, 1-888-221-8990. That is toll-free from any place. Again, I'm going to do it one more time. You should have that number down next to your phone, or like Vince Rosino, CPA extraordinaire, says, you should have that on speed dial in your phone.
Yes.
You can put it, program
it in.
Put it in your
contacts. As,
yeah. 1-888-221-8990. WCNO.
And Joe, to remind everybody again that that you're talking Social Security at 62, right. But don't forget about Medicare at 65, and making sure you, and you can do that online too.
Let's talk about that for a minute. What happens is you're eligible for Medicare the month you turn 65.
Yes, and you know, and up till 3 months, no sooner than 3 months before your birthday,
right?
You can apply for Medicare.
Now, don't delay on this. You need to get this taken care of. And what happens is, if you're not collecting Social Security, you now have to pay that $134 a month, or whatever the premium might be,
plus a penalty.
And if you miss it, you could be out to lunch for a couple of years until you get full
Social. And the penalty is your higher premiums, and it stays with you for life.
What you want to do, you want to make sure a few months before you turn 65 that you contact Social Security again, make that appointment, go down and see them, and walk through it step by step so you don't mess up, because this is something for the rest of your life, and yep. it's an important thing. 1-888-221-8990. Now Dottie should call and tell me we did a good job, Dottie.
If she's listening, I hope she's listening.
She's listening. She told
maybe
me
maybe she has other questions.
But I know she'd listen. She
did a great job. Can I speak just for a moment as a person who's gone through that? Because I was anxious in dealing with the government, you know, that
right.
Once I stepped out there, what would happen? But I was very impressed with the Social Security folk. And in fact, I fumble online with websites sometimes. When I went to apply for Social Security, and I was just going to talk to a counselor, and they said, well, we have a new thing then. I said, you can wait for a counselor be 45 minutes, or you can go to this window down here, and some guy will take you through the website. He'll sit there. He's an IT guy. He'll sit there while you go, answer all your questions, make sure you do it. In 15 minutes, I was done and signed up.
Wow. Well, that's very easy.
I am telling you this, folks. I mean, and Vince, you've been doing it, well, long time. Dealing with the IRS and Social Security some years ago might have been a little bit difficult, but boy, they really work hard today to be user-friendly.
Well, after the Bush administration, they got slapped around quite a bit. They straightened out their act. But I'll tell you, be honest with you, Joe, I've never met an IRS agent that wasn't willing to cooperate and work with you. They're not the bully
that people think.
People think. Yeah. It's not that way. Maybe they were at one time.
Maybe they were.
People just got afraid. They're not afraid anymore.
I did have an IRS agent that... he did full... Yeah, oh boy, we got into a big contract.
See, I haven't had that experience.
But that was, I'm telling you, that was 50 years ago.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Well, that was because of your lovely personality.
That's before I was born.
Yeah. Your lovely personality is what caused that.
He was tough. He was tough.
It's because you were going through puberty at that time.
Thank you. Thank you. 1-888.
He was already 50 years old.
221.
One thing I'd like to mention about Medicare.
Can I mention the phone again one more time first?
You can do what you want. It's your show.
Your show.
Thank you. 1-888-221-8990. Okay, Alan Love, guest attorney, go ahead.
You can take Part A, which is the hospital, but you can, if you wish, opt out of Part B, which is the doctor.
Right.
Medical profession is beginning to change. I'll talk about it later. Let's take this call.
You don't opt out. You have to opt in first.
Yeah.
Right. Let's take this call. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Good afternoon, Joe. How are you, sir?
Very good. Thank you, sir.
Wonderful. I have a question. We have had a term life insurance that is about to come to the full term.
Okay.
With a 20-year term life. And get to understand that, of course, the premium is going to escalate significantly.
Significantly. That's putting it mildly.
Right. It's going from 280, from 550 a year to like 10,000.
I know. Minor little adjustment, right.
Yes, sir. I am trying to find out what is the best option here in this situation.
Let's talk about it for a minute. Number one, how old are you?
61.
Are you in decent health? Meaning, are you on any prescription drugs?
No, sir.
Okay, are you heavy?
No, sir.
Are you skinny?
Well, that was a stump question right there. Let's see. Let me get on a scale, Joe.
Let me say. Okay.
Go ahead.
Have you had any operations?
No, sir.
Okay, here's what you can do. Why do you want life insurance?
In case something happened to me, my wife is going to be able to take care of herself.
That's the best answer in the whole world. I hope she's sitting there listening to you, because otherwise she's going to hit you in the head with a pan if you didn't answer that properly. So now, the reason we have life insurance is because in case we die before we're supposed to, we have other people that need to be taken care of. It could be children, it could be grandchildren, it could be a spouse, whatever it might be. If we don't have those things, in my opinion, very often life insurance becomes no reason to have it. Because leaving money to people that don't need it and you have to pay for it is one thing. Now, you can get at your age more term life insurance, and let's just say you were paying $200 a month for $50,000 or $100,000. You might pay double, maybe $500 a year or whatever the premium might be, but as long as you're in good health, you can get term insurance for the next 10, 15, 20 years. So what I normally do with people in your situation, and we can do this on the phone, you don't have to talk to you, nothing. I take your vital information, meaning your date of birth, your height, your weight, and you tell me your medical history, and we run a quote through these different companies and say, what's it gonna cost to get this man 50, 100, 200, pick a number, worth of life insurance for the next 10, 15, 20 years. So literally, I know that the existing policies, when they run out after 20, they have this ridiculous premium, but you're guaranteed insurability. So let's say you knew you were gonna, this 20-year term was running out next month, but you knew that you were gonna die in the next year because you had a terminal illness. But for $10,000, you could pay and get $100,000 worth of life insurance. It might be worth it. But if you're in good health, there's no way it's worth it. So what
the policy was actually for $400,000 for me and $100,000 for my wife.
Okay. Is she healthy also?
No, she said she's on some prescription drugs, some heart challenges.
Here's
medical challenges.
Well, here's what we'll do. You left your name and your phone number with Pastor Tom. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
I will call you if try tomorrow. If not, I will definitely get with you before now on Monday, and we'll ask some questions, and I'll do this over the phone. Doesn't cost you a nickel, and I'll find out what it costs you to get the best life insurance you can. Because you're more concerned about protecting your wife than you are protecting you in case she dies. Am I right?
That's right. Because I am the biggest earner.
Yes. Yes. So if something happened to you, she would have a problem. Something happens to her.
Yes, sir.
Financially, I could do some funny stuff now, but I'm not going to, because I never talk about funny stuff when wives die. Especially if they're standing nearby. Anyway, that we want to make sure that she is protected in case you happen to go. Okay, So I will give you a call in the next couple of days, and if you don't hear from me by Monday, you make sure you call back. But I will definitely, and we'll find out what it costs you. And it's not usually that much. It's not.
So are we going to be looking at term life, or what is the other one? Term life,
whole life would cost you two or three times as much, and you would pay it all the way forever. And what happens with whole life, let me just explain the difference. Term life, you're paying for protection. Whole life, you're paying for protection, but they put excess money into a savings account. Now, that's not the way the insurance companies phrase it, but that's how I'm phrasing it. So let's say term life costs you $100 a month. Whole life would cost you $200 a month for the same amount of insurance. But in theory, if you didn't die in 10 or 15 years, you'd have some cash value built up that you could take out. It's not necessarily a good investment, and I've never ever seen life insurance as an investment. What you want to look at is, what is my goal to protect my wife? So now I'm 62. If I'm not dead by 82 and she's 78, so be it. You understand what I'm saying?
Got you.
But okay. Instead of asking all these questions now, what I look at is, how do we keep the cost as low as possible, but yet protect our loved ones?
Yes, sir.
In case something happens.
Right. Wonderful. Okay. Wonderful. I await your call, and thank you very much. You gentlemen are doing a fine job.
Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you, caller.
You know, that's a subject we don't hit very often, but literally, I'm a big believer in term life insurance. You know, life insurance is not an investment. It's sold very often that way. But truly, it's against the rules to sell it that way. You're not supposed to do that. But term, you're strictly buying protection. And in his case, think about this. He's got a wife that's probably a few years younger, and she may have some health problems. But on the other hand, you know why men die before their wives, don't you?
Because they can.
Because we can, yeah.
It's anyway, good to know.
The rules are we're supposed to. It doesn't always happen. Yeah. But the reality is this. In my opinion, the only reason to have life insurance is because it's necessary to protect our loved ones in case something happens.
And at what levels, Joe?
Well, here comes the $64,000 question. I've had some people say, I don't want to leave her more than $5,000.
Right. Bury me. And that's not enough even to bury
you.
That's
not even enough hurry to bury you. Yeah. On the other hand, what he was saying, he had $400,000. See, now, if I had young children at home, and now I'm looking at my wife is going to get a Social Security benefit, and how much is that going to be? And now the kids have to go to college, and I want to do all of these things. If I died today, how much money is necessary?
Right.
And you do that. So when you do the calculation, the older you get, kids are now through school, they're out on their own. Okay, fine. We don't worry about those. But you might have another thing you worry about, grandchildren. Mm. And that comes a new wrinkle. And you start to think, you know, obviously, and Vince is a brand new grandpa now with two brand new grandbabies.
I have one new grandbaby and one that's 3 years old.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And this is a concern that you and your wife have about these grandkids. So literally you change your focus from your children to your grandchildren at some point in life. So we have to weigh those things and put that in. Anyway.
So I didn't answer the question. You don't know how much you need, but it's an almost a case-by-case basis is what you're saying.
You have to look at each individual.
See what your lifestyle is and what you would need, how old your children are, how long you'd need to save for their college educations, et cetera.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of things that come into this calculation.
And then you put a number together. Then you say, okay, fine. Let's say it's $500,000, and it comes up and it costs $500 a month. And he says, I can't afford $500. Okay. Let's work backwards. What can you afford? I can afford 100. I can afford 50. I can afford 200.
That's the way the car dealerships sell your cars.
Well, you know, it's almost
how much
that.
Can you afford?
I
will fit the car
for the $100,000 car, but I can afford the $20,000 car.
Well, we can do it if you pay for 15 years.
I wish Mike Paulus was here. Because I wanted to talk about when you hear these commercials for mortgages, and they're talking... annual interest rate 3.75, APR 4.18.
Right.
Like, what's the difference between the 3.75 and a 4.18?
It's called fees.
Then they come up and they say, and we pay all your closing costs. You pay nothing. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Forget that. There's no such thing as a free lunch unless you're a politician. So whenever I hear these things, I don't know how they get away with saying, we pay. They don't pay. You're paying either with a higher interest rate or with something in your mortgage. There's no such thing.
Well, you know, Joe, as you often say, everybody has to earn a living.
Yeah.
So nobody's working for free. Unless you're donating your time to unless a cause
you're a philanthropist. Do we know any philanthropists in this room? No.
No.
That was pretty easy. You know, right? Except Alan.
Now, you're Alan is probably a philanthropist.
Can I get back to the subject that we started before the call?
What's your name again?
Sure, but, you're Alan, right?
I registered and applied and got into Medicare, and about 3 years ago my doctor said I'm leaving the clinic that he was at and he's starting a concierge practice. Mm-hmm. And I said, what is that? And he explained that he is opting out of Medicare and that I would have to sign a form in order to do that, and that's what I did. So I no longer have Medicare Part B. But in return for that, I pay the doctor a monthly fee, and I have 24/7 access to him.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
You get a terminal illness that costs $1 million. Okay. He's going to pay that?
No, because the only thing I've opted out of is my primary care physician. All the hospital things are covered. All the specialists are covered.
Okay, so you still have Part B.
Well, except for the primary care physician.
Well, Alan, do you have an HMO or a PPO?
Yes.
Okay, that's why. So literally what happens, folks, in the, and this is something that we go through constantly. Let's just talk Medicare for a minute.
Okay.
Medicare has two parts, A and B. A is hospital, B is doctors. The A part says, we will pay the whole hospital bill except for a deductible, and the deductible now is how much? Do we know?
20%, isn't
it? No, no. $700 or $800 or $1,000. The hospital.
The hospital, yeah. I think it's $1,000.
And it's an annual deductible. Part B is the doctors, and Medicare pays 80% of approved.
Approved, keyword.
Approved, keyword, expenses. Now, literally, every doctor that I know except pediatricians in the state of Florida approves Medicare, because if they didn't, they'd be out of business, because 90% of us are old. So 80% of the bill is paid by Medicare. The 20% is not paid by Medicare. So what happens is people now have a couple of choices. They can go get a supplement. They might pay a couple $100 a month that will pick up that 20%. And now they're 100% covered under Medicare A, and they're 100% covered on Medicare B, and they have no cost out of pocket, period, if they get either a C or an F, Frank, plan. F plan is the one that covers everything. Now, that costs you $200 a month plus the $135 a month out of your Social Security check, or $134, whatever that number is. So now comes along insurance company B and says, we have a managed care plan, that's magic words, and we're going to call these either an HMO, Health Maintenance Organization, or a PPO, Preferred Provider Organization. And literally, Medicare gives those companies a annual amount of money, and I don't know what the amount of money is, but let's say it's $6,000 or $8,000 or $7,000 a year that they pay to that insurance company. The insurance company now agrees to take care of you, whatever expenses come out, minus whatever co-pays, deductibles, etc. And most of these plans say the most you can pay per year is $5,000, $6,000, $3,000. No more than that can ever come out of your pocket. But you have to go to either, if it's an HMO, very specified doctors, or a PPO, specified doctors with certain exclusions. Understand, you need to get educated on this before you turn 65. But the HMO and PPO can work very well. It can work very well. But The concierge doctor says, okay, fine, I'm opting out of Medicare, and you're going to pay me for regular care, and you're going to pay me a concierge. But if anything comes up, like major stuff, the HMO or PPO is going to pick that cost up.
And that's exactly what I had last February.
Yes. And there's nothing wrong with any of these things, but you do have to understand how each one works.
The way I understand it, Joe, because I had one of our network group that was a doctor that did exactly. All right, we'll pick this up.
Let's take this call, and then we'll get back on that. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Hi, yes. Good afternoon. Appreciate what you guys do.
Thank you.
I have a question. I have a grandmother. She's deceased. She lived in New York. She died. We assumed that it was an apartment. We found out later that it was a co-op. After she died, they continued to collect money or take money from the co-op for 18 months. And then also filed a case in court saying that she owed rent, back rent, and she was deceased. And we were not allowed to enter the apartment because at the time we thought it was an apartment. They said we had to pay back rent. And I don't know a lot about co-ops. But the question is that legal to do, is to continue to charge someone rent if they reside in a co-op after they're deceased?
This is Vince. I think the only answer you can give is a general answer because we're not lawyers. And I think you would need a specific attorney that deals with tenant and owner matters, because it sounded to me, generally speaking, if somebody dies, then they need
it's done.
I mean, but of course, you'd have to notify the landlord that they're deceased and so on. It must be a provision in the lease itself.
Now, was she a tenant paying rent, or was she an owner? Well,
did
in
she
the co-op?
Own the co-op?
She owned the co-op.
Because with a co-op, you know, you own a percentage of the building, unlike a condo where you own the land and the building. This is just a percentage, like a share of stock in an entity called, you know, that building is a co-op entity. You own a share of it, so you own it. And again, you have to either sell it upon death or your estate. The estate would have to deal with the termination it's not a lease. The estate would have to deal with actually selling the property and getting out of that co-op.
See, here's the problem. If none of the heirs, meaning you or anybody else, was notified, and the co-op says, hey, fine, we have a monthly fee that has to go on to maintain the co-op, and if nobody notifies us, and you, mom owned it, but now mom's gone, now you own it as heirs, you're responsible for that fee. Now, 18 months later, let's say the fee was $200 a month, that's $2,400 plus 12, let's say $4,000, and you could sell the co-op for $100,000, you'd still have to pay off that $4,000.
Yeah, they probably put a lien on the co-op. Once you stopped paying those dues.
Yeah.
Yeah, and plus there's taxes, Joe, you have to pay.
Of course.
There may be other fees and things you
Point
have to
is,
pay.
It's in New York, is that correct?
Yes.
And you're living in Florida, correct?
Yes.
Okay. This is catch 22, but the odds are that you will have to find an attorney in New York and explain the situation and have them file an estate, open up an estate and make this an asset and pay off the claims, etc., and then sell it, and then you guys should end up with some money left over. Do you still own the co-op, probably, am I?
We were not even aware that it was a co-op.
It's one of those questions you never ask. See, you know what a condominium is? It's almost the same thing. It's phraseology. But the reality is this. That co-op could be worth $200,000 to buy from another person, or 100 or 50 or 300, pick a number. And you may owe $5,000 or $8,000 or $10,000 in back fees, and they would file a lien, meaning the co-op association would file a lien on it, and they need to get paid. At some point, they could enforce that lien and actually take possession of it, but that's pretty rare. normally.
My guess is they also have a provision to foreclose, Joe. So it's possible if over a point in time, when
they could sue
to foreclose on the unit, which means they would sell it, take all their fees out, and then remit the difference to the estate, wherever it may be.
You hear what he's just said? They literally could foreclose, take their fees, expenses, attorney fees, etc., and then whatever money was left would go to your mom's estate, which would then go to the beneficiaries of the estate, depending. Did your mom have a will or a trust or anything?
No.
Okay, well, that makes it more exciting. But here comes again. I know. I'm not helping you a whole lot, but the reality is this. If you have, do you have relatives in New York?
No.
Isn't that more exciting? You know, this is not getting easier. Right. What town was your mom in New York?
Manhattan.
Okay, so the co-op in Manhattan might be worth a ton of money. So, I mean, it could be worth a half a million or 300,000 or a million. I mean, Manhattan is expensive stuff. I probably, here's something we might want to concern. I'm going to give your name and phone number to Greg Fasula, our attorney, who is not a New York attorney, but he may be able to refer you to somebody in New York that can help guide you. Because I hate to see you walk away from a couple hundred thousand or more dollars, because co-ops in Manhattan, I mean, the worst part of Manhattan, they're expensive. The best part in Manhattan, they're unbelievably expensive.
Yes. Is there anybody, anyone has stepped forward as an executor or standing up? Or is, of course, she died before she named anybody, I take it.
Are you an only child?
You're the only, yeah.
Actually, I'm the granddaughter. My dad's the, she only had one. My dad was an only child.
Now, is your dad coherent? Is he competent to make decisions?
He's a senior.
So. Well, so am I, but that doesn't mean I'm out to lunch totally.
If I may make a suggestion.
Here, we have an attorney sitting over here.
Once you hit 60, you lose your mind.
That's it.
You might want to go on the internet and go to the New York State Bar website, and many times they have
New York State Bar Association
website, and many times they have biographies of attorneys who are in that line of practice. And that might give you leads of who to contact.
And literally, you do know the city, am I right?
Manhattan, she said.
I know, but north, south, if you're in.
No.
You don't know.
No, I'm not okay. That. Yeah, okay. Like when people say what borough, I'm like, I don't know what.
How about
borough?
Your dad? Besides the fact he's old like me, is he coherent at all?
Yes.
Then you ask him, hey, what section did mom live in? Did she live in Soho or give me some names.
Just get the address.
Yeah, once you know the address.
It doesn't matter what the area, the neighborhood is.
If you have the address, then you can find an attorney within some proximity to that, like Alan is saying, that has the expertise to handle this type of thing.
You really probably should look for an estate attorney up there because they're familiar with these kind of things.
And literally...
Well, the New York Bar Association website would certainly be the first place I'd go to.
That's an excellent idea.
Start with that.
That's an excellent idea.
And if you have any problems with that, you call us back. You've got the radio station's number. We'll help you along the way. This is an unusual situation, but the reality is this. I hate to see you and your father walk away from a couple of hundred thousand or more dollars because co-ops in New York City, in Manhattan, can be worth...
A lot of money. You know, caller, do you know the name of the building? Do you have a property manager's name or somebody you can contact there? For no other reason than to just notify them that there are legatees to this property and that you're going to start going through the process to claim it. So at least maybe you'll get an idea where they are in the process. Did they foreclose? Are they in the process of foreclosing? So you get an idea where you stand. So when you go to this attorney, you can say, look, you know, they're about to foreclose. I need somebody right away to do something here.
Yeah, your key is this. It has an address, and very often a building would have a property manager or at least a doorman, somebody that can guide you.
Probably the property manager. They have a property manager of these co-ops.
And they're usually listed.
They're listed. They'll tell you
online.
And if it's Manhattan, it's probably one of the big ones.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Are we helping you? Are we
I was just curious why they didn't say that it was a co-op. They told me that it was pretty much that we had to pay the back rent in order to get in.
Well, they probably just assumed that you know it's a co-op and that you're a New Yorker and you understand that stuff. If you'd have told them that you're a hardcore Floridian, they wouldn't want to talk to you at all.
You know how that's not true.
You know how those New Yorkers are.
Come on, Joe, that's not true.
That's true.
Anyway,
no, it's not true.
No, anyway, I'm trying to say is, forget that part. But the reality is this: they probably assumed you knew what a co-op was because everybody in New York knows what a co-op is, and especially in Manhattan.
Not necessarily.
That's a pretty old system, though.
Yeah, but they may not understand the legal definition between.
Yeah, it was just strange that they would say you have to pay back the amount due when they were still deducting it.
Well, here comes the quote. Here comes the coup. If you have rent that you never paid, I don't care what it's on, and you still have possession of the property, you own that. You owe it. So the maintenance on that building is the co-op fee. They have to pay the doorman. They have to pay the guard. They have to pay the utilities for the common areas. They have to pay insurance for the building. All that stuff costs money. And because it's not being paid, it's accruing, and they can file a lien, or they can foreclose. But if they foreclose under law, now I'm not an attorney, but Vince, if the foreclosure cost were $50,000 and the place sold for $1 million, you'd have $950,000 worth of profit that would go to the estate. They cannot keep the profit.
Once again, it's part of that co-op agreement that you signed off on,
right,
when you bought the place,
right,
which basically is like an HOA document.
Same thing.
It says here's your rights and obligations, and it'll probably say in there if you default.
Yeah, it's all in there.
It tells you what steps they can take and will take.
Even though you don't have knowledge of that and you don't have experience in it, think about this: if you live in a condo today here in Florida, you have to pay a fee every month, and if you don't pay that fee every month, they put a lien on it, and at some point they have the ability to foreclose and sell the unit and pay their fees back, and whatever money is left, if there's any left, would go to the owners. Co-ops are very similar to a condo.
Yeah, they're similar. But but you really need to get more information, caller, and do Alan's suggestion was a good one. Go into the Bar Association to get names of credible, respected lawyers in the area. And then pursue that with them, or you might at least give the heads up to the property manager of the property. Call them and say, "Look, I'm a beneficiary of this policy.
Yeah.
I mean, of this property, and you know, we're starting to go through the process of claiming.
Help us,
what's ours, and
they
know,
will
help us.
They help
probably
you.
Would.
That's their job. The property management company is there to help you and to do the right thing for the property.
The last thing you want to do is have the money go into a unclaimed property account with
terrible.
The state of New York.
Yeah, we don't want that. Here's the key. The steps are, number one, I would call, look it up online, get the property management phone number and start from that and just explain what you just told us and then what we explained to you. And if you have problems with that, you call us back and we'll help you.
Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate what you guys are doing. You have a great afternoon.
Thank you so much.
Same. Thank you for calling, caller.
Yeah, that's not an everyday occurrence. But, you know, Vince, it might be more often than people think.
You know, unfortunately, and she's talking about her grandmother.
Yeah.
I think that generation maybe didn't or weren't as knowledgeable about estate planning, and they didn't tell people what they owned.
They kept everything
very close to the vest.
Yeah. She didn't tell her father. You know, she may not have liked her son.
Right.
You know how that works. You didn't trust
but
him.
But even a simple thing like a will.
Yeah.
This way, you know.
But here comes, but there is an estate. If you have to open an estate, sure, it costs more because if you don't have a will, but the blood line is there, so that would go first to the son and then to the daughter or granddaughter or whatever. So it's to their benefit to pursue it. I mean, I'll tell you what, if you want to give up that co-op in Manhattan, just call me. I mean, it's there.
You know, she might find out it's in a very nice neighborhood.
You know, there's in Manhattan, even the bad neighborhoods have gotten good.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some pretty substantial real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Bill Clinton moved into Harlem, got his office in Harlem and stuff. In Harlem now, there's some places over $1 million in Harlem.
That's right.
I mean, the rules of Manhattan have become.
Well, you know, it's It's the generations coming behind us, Joe. A lot of them want to migrate to the cities. That's what I found. That the
city living.
City living has become very popular with the millennials or the the Gen Ys.
Yeah, I don't blame them.
You know, but it's expensive. I mean, a two-bedroom, you're talking about $2 million, $3
million. Unbelievable numbers.
I mean, really.
There's nothing cheap in Manhattan, in a city.
My former hometown is an example of that. Milwaukee, when the breweries left Milwaukee, you had these big brewery plants in downtown Milwaukee, and they got the idea to make a condominium lofts out of that. And the young people, the 20s and 30-year-old, just moved in there, revitalized the whole downtown Milwaukee, which was dying.
And they're doing that all over the country. Over. I was in St. Joseph, Missouri, and they were doing the same thing there. I mean, but it's the nature. Young people, instead of going out to the suburbs, are moving back into the city now. It's a it's a new movement. 1-888-221-8990 So we covered Medicare a bit. We covered HMOs and PPOs a bit. We've talked about
Social Security.
We talked a little bit about co-ops in Manhattan and what a co-op is. We didn't really get into big definition, but it's very similar to a condo, to a condominium. It's a form of ownership.
It's a it's a different form of ownership. It's like it's owning like stock in a corporation. Yeah. In fact, it is a corporation.
Yes,
it's
exactly.
A co-op corporation. And you own a piece of the stock.
Yeah.
And you could sell it.
Yeah.
But there are restrictions. My experience with my clients who have co-ops, their boards are very strict and tight and for the good.
Oh, of course.
I mean, they
there's rules.
It's rules. If you want to buy one, you have to pass muster with the board. You got to interview with them.
Well, they do that in condos too, or homeowners association.
Yes, they do.
But whatever the rules are, they're in a document, and that document was approved by the state, and it's an official document, and it's hard to change it. So it's just, and literally, what happens is, I would be very, very concerned if I was this granddaughter to make sure that this doesn't get squandered. Because there's no reason to let that happen.
And it's a lesson to everybody else out there, Joe.
Big time.
If you have parents or grandparents that are seniors, you might want to just ask a simple question.
Yeah.
Although it's dangerous, they may think you're looking for their money. But you, if you ask it in the right way, to see that they've prepared for their ultimate demise.
It's funny you say that, because this is a subject that came up again recently, where grandma, in her 80s, put her two children on the deed to her house. And I said, that's a mistake. It's a mistake, and here's why. Well, we'll take this phone call, but keep me on this subject. It kind of flows with that. Caller, Joe Martek, you're on the radio.
Yes, Sam, good afternoon. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Just want to let you guys know that you're doing an awesome job. I'm actually sitting in the garage with the radio right next to me.
Very good.
Well, we're glad. That's what makes it all worthwhile, caller.
Yeah. I walk with the radio every Wednesday afternoon.
Thank you so much. That's wonderful.
Yeah, my question
is... But do you turn it off when we come on?
Oh, yes, I have to. Because I'm listening to myself. Sure. Uh-huh. I do not want to hear myself, okay? I think I sound awful, so okay. I don't want to listen to my
You have a nice voice, Tom.
Someone had called earlier in regards to life insurance.
Right.
I also had a life insurance for, it was for, I took the 10 years ago. I'm now turning 62 in the next month. Next 2 months, I'll be 62. However, once I hit 70, I was paying $65 a month for a $185,000 insurance.
Nice.
Once I turn 70, it's going to go up to $750 a month.
That's true. That's normal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in my situation, do I pay the next 10 years for something that I may not, say if I live to see 70? Okay, that money's going to go. I'm not going to get a dime out of it.
Here comes the magic question. Why do you have life insurance?
Again, just in case anything happened to me, my children are still young. You know, my youngest son is 31, so they are adult. But God forbid, if something should happen to me, I don't want to put that burden and pressure on them and my husband for funeral costs, which is very expensive.
How much is your life? How much is the life insurance policy? What's your death benefit?
The policy that I took out was for $185,000, and when I took it out, it was like if anything should happen to me, it would pay off for the house and also pay for funeral expenses.
Okay, because if it was only funeral expenses, you'd have a gold.
You're going to have one big funeral. It's a party and a half.
That's a real
so party. $185,000 is a lot of money. So here's what I'm trying to ask you this. Right now you're 62, and this goes to age 70. Mm-hmm. If you died today, your husband and your children or whoever you designated as beneficiaries are going to get that $185,000. Mm-hmm. What I always look at with life insurance, why do you have life insurance? Do they need the money? If your children got that money, is it something they need because they have special needs, they're disabled, or whatever?
Well, one of the things, when I took it out first, they were younger.
I understand.
So, and I wanted was to, if anything should happen to me, and at the time I wasn't married, that they would able to pay off for the house. And you know, have money for
well,
my
so now, girl. Here you go. Let's say you don't die, and all of a sudden you turn 70, you haven't died, and now you're not going to leave them $185,000, but I'm assuming that they don't need it, and because what happens, the cost for life insurance obviously is going to go up as you don't get younger. And if your health has any problems, it goes up even more. I'm looking again at what your goal is with that money. So let's just say, Joe, I want to leave my family $100,000, period, no matter what. That you don't need to tell me any more than that as a goal. Then what we need to do is say, okay, fine. Let's check and find out today what it would cost you to have that for the next 10, 20, 30 years.
Right.
And you can get rid of the one you've got because it's going to catch up with you if you don't die.
Exactly.
So rather than...
So my goal is right now is just for them to have something for funeral expenses.
Well, let me tell you, I hate to tell you, you can get a great funeral for 10 grand. You don't need $185,000.
That's exactly, but then I wasn't thinking like that. Now that I'm getting older and realize that it's going up and what's going to cost me when I turn 70, I said, you know what, my kids are grown, they're all working, doing okay.
They don't need
it. You have something to bury me, I'm good to go.
Hey, listen, I've got a buddy of mine that owns a funeral home down the street here. He promised to fry me for $700 just to get rid of
it. Well, that's true. That's true.
Joe, you know, technically you're broiled. You're not fried.
You give these people all this money, and what do they do with it? They waste it anyway.
You know, it's an interesting thing. I had a client of mine, and you'll get a kick out of this. They're originally from Jamaica. Magnificent.
Ah!
Are you from Jamaica?
Yes, I am.
So he called me to come to his house, and he's crying because he's dying. He's got a terminal illness, and he's worried about his wife. And I looked up their things, and I said, look, your wife is fine. She's got plenty of money. She's going to have plenty of income. And I said, one of the problems with you Jamaicans is you like to have big parties when people die. I said, I got a buddy of mine. You got a buddy of mine that will fry you for $700. I'll buy the booze. We'll come to the house. We'll have a party. We'll put out about $2,000. You know what his wife said?
What did she say?
What's your buddy's name?
you look out for people and you think about and you worry about them. And I realize, you know, hey, I work all my life. I work very hard, took care of my boys,
right?
You know, as a single parent, and working so hard. And now I get to a certain age and I'm worried about leaving money for them to pay off for the house, that it might bring the girlfriends in. Their children destroy my property anyway, dawg. Have women going in and out of my house, my four boys. Come on. You know,
I think you've done your job.
I need the number of the guy that will fry me for $700.
There you go.
And I can call it a day.
It's cheaper if they broil you.
I don't care what they do with me. They don't want to bury me, then that's their problem.
You need oil for
all I said was, he said, for $700, I'll put you in a paper bag. In a box, and you know, no urn, no nothing, and they can throw you wherever they want to get rid of you, Joe. You can use you for fertilizer,
exactly.
But you'd probably kill the roses.
The ocean, yeah. I have a big backyard. They could bury me, throw the ashes there, and plant. It's a good fertilizer.
That's my point. So what I'm trying to say is, you know, I look at a funeral as a party, as a celebration of life, and especially if you know you're a Christian, you know we're going to go to something better. Then it's called. Why would I want to cry? I'm saying, hey. I've had people say, Joe, we can't wait for you to leave. We know we're going to have a good party.
Exactly. So, you know, I just decide that, you know, I'm gonna cancel it, which I am about to, because putting money into it for 10 years, and when I calculate how much I put in for 10
that,
years,
my point
I'm
is
not
this.
Gonna get a dime back.
You
know, I could save that money, period.
You hit it that's right on the thing. If you don't have a goal to give that money for some reason, and that you're past your goal, you've already accomplished, and you didn't die, now it's called, why do I do this? And I
you're right.
Yeah, I think
you're right.
Yep. And I hate to tell you, but almost any one of these places for under $1,000 will fry you. And my buddy, he offered actually to do it for me for free, but I said, my luck, he'd die before me. You know, so.
Yeah, but you know that's true. So I'm gonna, you know, really cancel it, and you know, maybe I probably do something small, a $10,000 insurance, which is not gonna cost me.
There you go. Now you're starting to make some sense. Yeah. I agree.
Okay.
With you. All right.
Thank you so much.
Uh-huh, bye-bye.
Okay.
You know, it's the reason, why do we have life insurance? And I ask this to every single person. Why do you want it? You know, and if, well, the only reason I want it is to leave my kids money so they can become bums. Wait a minute. Wrong answer. Mm-hmm. We have.
Well, I'm sure nobody actually said
well,
that.
Well, you know what I'm saying. But like she was alluding to the fact, hey, I know they'd bring in girlfriends and stuff. They'd have a party and a half. I guarantee you, if I gave $100,000 to any one of my kids today, they smile.
You need a trust, Joe. Put the money.
1-888-221-8990. Let me give a quick subject. In the last week or so, I've had a number of people that had 401ks, 403bs, retirement plans, and they didn't understand what they've got. One of the things that I do, I counsel people, don't charge you anything for that, to show you what you've got and what your options are. I had one today that was in some investments that may not have been in her best interest. So we can change them. It doesn't cost a nickel to change them. It actually costs $29 to sell one and to buy another. Okay, big deal. Nothing. But the key is this. It's something that we do, and I do this for a living, and part of this is easy for me, and I don't need to meet with people. I can talk to them on the phone and give them some advice that can make some sense. Right. I've had other people that have emailed me their options in their retirement plans that I can go through and look at them, and I can come back and give them my opinion on what to do. I think Alan and I, over the last year or two, have changed our opinions that it looks like the economy is going to run for a period of time. We're talking to Jamie Dimon today, the head of Chase Morgan Stanley, and saying that he expects that by the end of this year, we will have a 4% GDP quarter. So life is looking pretty good. In the meantime, it won't go up forever, the market. But we have
hear that Starbucks is now giving employee bonuses because of the tax break.
Go into Walmart and talk to anybody at Walmart today and ask them if they like what's going on with the tax plan, because they all got a bonus and a raise. Everybody is happy.
How it's going to stimulate the economy. It's got to get money into the hands of the people.
We've got to go, Joe.
Hey, we got 15 seconds.
15 seconds.
We're saying goodbye. Listen, folks, everybody, every caller, thank you. And if we can help you, you know, that's what we do. And until next week, thank you so much.
Thank you, callers. God bless.
You've been listening to the Team Martech program. The Team Martech program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team Martech program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team Martech is available at 772-678-7725.